Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today. So Pedro, I'm taking you way back to your childhood, and I want you to talk about maybe the first brand that you can remember being really connected to.
It's kind of a sad story, though, my connection with the brand. You know, I remember there was this bike, you know, it was a kind of a freestyle bike. I was probably like 6 or 7 years old, and they had advertising, you know, all over TV, and it was next to Christmas. And I was kind of bugging my parents all the time saying, look, I really want this bike. You know, it was called BMX Freestyle. And I was crazy about that bike. It was my dream, whatever. And then Christmas night, you know, they bring all the gifts and they bring a wrapped bike. And I went crazy, crazy, crazy. And they said, oh, sorry, this is not for you. This is for your sister. So it was like a girl's bike, you know. And I was so upset. And I never got my BMX. But that's something that, you know, I had a memory about a brand, because a brand that I wanted a lot.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. Today, my guest on the CMO podcast is Pedro Earp. He's the chief marketing officer of AB InBev, the largest beer company in the world and one of the largest companies in the world, period. $55 billion in sales. 7 of the 10 top beers in the world are his. And what I loved about the conversation with Pedro today is he also looks out over ZX Ventures, which is the venture arm of AB InBev. So he's involved in acquisitions, partnerships, new brands, new forms of selling, you know, beer and distributing it, as well as all the current brands. So this mix of how do you keep your foot in today's marketing and keeping today's brands healthy and finding the new brands and new services of the future is fascinating. And how he's mastering that, we all have a lot to learn from. So now here's my conversation with Pedro Earp. Pedro, thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
So did you bring me any beer today?
I didn't, man. I didn't.
You did
not. I should have, right?
if you had brought me a beer, which one would you have brought?
I heard you were a fan of Stella. Is that true or no?
It is true. It's not a myth. It is true.
I should have brought Stella.
Well, very good. Later. We'll do that later. So listen, I'd like to start with a little game, right? And I want to throw a word out there. It might be a brand, might be something else. I just want you to respond with one word or one phrase.
All right. Okay? Let's do it.
So here we go. So first one is Bud Light.
Friends.
Corona.
Beach.
Orange Vanilla Coke.
Ooh. Orange Vanilla Coke. Not for me.
Good. Stella Artois.
Sophistication.
Nice. Heineken.
What is that?
Goose Island.
Kraft.
Brahma.
Flavor.
Mick Ultra.
Wellness.
Consumer.
Everything.
So say more about that. You're in this amazing job.
Yeah.
Stuff you do affects millions of people around the world. In your category, which is not beer, it's bringing people together. There's no company in the world who brings more people together than you guys. That's unreal. So how do you think about that every day?
Yeah.
What you're doing affects so many people and how they come together?
No, it's a privilege, you know, and beer has been doing that for more than 10,000 years, right? I was talking to some of my colleagues who just had an amazing week in China. And we had people talking about the role of beer in society, you know, and wellness and all that. And a lot of people don't know, but actually beer created civilization. You know, there are a lot of studies now since the 1950s that people found out that actually the first grains that people planted. And that's the reason why the settling communities was actually Bali to, you know, to make beer. So people thought it was, you know, people settling communities to, you know, to plant and to grow wheat to do bread. And now they found out that it was actually beer. Yeah. And, you know, and so there are a lot of scholars talking about, you know, how beer over time is some social tensions, you know, and how people got together because of beer. So it's, you know, it's a privilege, but a big responsibility, you know, to kind of take the flag of beer forward.
So has that thinking evolved at AB InBev? You know, you guys have talked about brand purpose a lot and the purpose of the company and the purpose of your brands. So has that evolved over time?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first your book was a big inspiration for us, right? We always use the concept of brand purpose and brand ideal. And that has been, I think, more stronger than ever, you know, Jim, because people talk a lot about technology now and they talk a lot about, you know, being relevant in culture and things like that. And I think these are all things that actually serve, you know, the brand purpose, and they make the brand purpose even more targeted and even more relevant. But it all starts with, you know, what kind of difference your brand makes in people's lives, right? How your brand improves people's lives. And, you know, there's a risk, I think, that people focus on culture by itself, or they focus on technology, segmentation, targeting, and they forget that actually what's going to drive the brand forward is the role that it has on people's lives.
It's a hard question for you, I know, because you love all your babies. Which of your brands do you think is doing the best job on bringing their purpose to life?
I do stuff, you know. I mean, we have so many brands.
Or who's doing a great job? I mean,
all over the world. You know, I like a lot. I've been, you know, I was just on my way now taking a look at the work that Budweiser just did with Wade, you know, today, the guy's retiring. I think Budweiser has been a brand that has been striking an emotional chord, you know, talking to the heart of Americans. You know, it's always on the, you know, the top five of the Super Bowl and things like that. Doing that in a very contemporary way, you know, we're using digital a lot and things like that, but also, you know, really, really embracing what the brand stands for, you know. So we have many brands that I think, you know, are doing well. I think, you know, Michelob Ultra is the fastest growing brand that you asked for the last 3 years, also doing very well. But, you know, I think, you know, we have some brands that are doing okay.
So to give some context for the Dwayne Wade video, this is his last year playing in the NBA. And as he's going through his last year, he's trading jerseys with other great players. Well, Budweiser released this 4-minute video of Dwayne Wade standing on the court and different people approach him whose life he has deeply affected. It is incredibly authentic. It's an incredibly moving video. Watch it. So one more question about you before we're jumping into some heart-to-heart about CMO, the CMO world. So can you tell me something that I could learn about you that's not online? So much of our life is accessible now.
Today, everything is online. Our life is all a open Facebook, not an open book, right? No, something that people actually find funny about me when I say is that I'm a marathon runner. I know that it doesn't look like I don't have the shape of a marathon. You see, everybody's laughing that I'm a marathon runner.
Looks so deceiving, right?
Yeah,
you're wearing the right shirt.
But I try to challenge myself of every year running a marathon. You know, to keep.
But the last marathon you ran it in like 4.5 hours, right?
Yeah, 4:15.
That's good.
Yeah, it was okay.
So your goal this year is.
Less than four. Let's see. Yeah. Going to Chicago. Chicago is like one of the fastest marathons in the world, to see that if I can go under four.
Fantastic. And what will you drink after the marathon?
Michelob Ultra.
Good. Of course. On brand.
Yeah. Michelob, actually beer, you know, a lot of people drink beer after, you know, after marathons. Of course, not only the reward, right, of drinking a beer after you accomplish something, but because of carbonation. Mm-hmm. You actually rehydrate faster than water, you know, and you have carbs and everything. So this is my go-to beer.
Well, good luck. I'll be there cheering.
Thanks, man.
So let's talk this CMO role. And I think you have chief marketing officer, right? You probably have the most enlightened role in the industry now. And the reason I say that is because you look out over all of the marketing in AB InBev, a $55 billion beverage company, and you look out over your new venture group,
yeah,
which you led for several years. Now, I know you're only 3 months into the job, you're a new CMO, but how visionary is that to put the future and the present together under one leader? So I want to know, how the hell do you manage that?
Yeah.
What do you work on? How do you spend your day? I mean, what do you spend your time on?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's, you know, it has been a journey for us. You know, we really kind of tried to ramp up our efforts in innovation from 2008, 2010 onwards. And mindset wise, I think we've always been there, but I think we didn't get the governance right. Whenever you have kind of small things try to compete for resources with things that are big and are more short term, it's very hard. You know, so back in 2015, you know, our board, they get together every year on their strategy session, and they discuss saying, look, you know, we have a gap in innovation, we gotta accelerate that. And it actually came from the board, the idea of setting up a separate ventures group. And I was invited to lead that, you know, that group, and things really start getting traction, you know, because when you really separate resources, when you separate people, when you bring people with other skill set, then the thing really got traction, you know. And now I think the idea a little bit is to try to bring some of the mindset and some of the methodologies, you know, in terms of innovation also to the core business. So I'm super excited about that new phase. And the only way of doing that, it's actually always having people that are better than ourselves, than yourselves, right? To go there and step up and taking your role. So we have, you know, Bernardo Novick, which is the person that is kind of leading now ZX on a daily basis, managing. I'm basically spending 90% of my time on the core business and 10%.
When you say core business, you mean
the marketing, yeah.
Bud Light, Stella, the big brands.
Exactly.
So give me a day in your life. I mean, what happens when you wake up? I know they're all different, but
yeah.
Just give me an idea of your rituals. What happens? How early do you get up? What do you do in the morning? How do you attack your day? How do you prepare for it?
Yeah.
How much is it in your control versus not?
So I usually wake up early. I wake up between like 5 and 5:30. And then I try to exercise, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit. And the great thing is that, you know, now you can basically
exercise. So what's your ritual? Do you run? You go to a fit class?
I run like 4 or 5 times, you know, a week. And it's great because now you can basically listen to podcasts, you know, learn new things every day. So that this is at least like, 1 hour every day that I'm trying to.
What's your favorite running podcast or your favorite music?
You know, I listen to a lot of things. You know, I listen kind of the Lean Startup podcast. I listen to, HBR. I listen to the McKinsey, quarterly. I listen to the, Scott Galloway, new podcast is, it's a good one. So I take a look a little bit, the subject that I'm interested in, and then I go to look for the, the podcast. I've also been downloading a lot of YouTube now on YouTube Premium. You can download the video. So I look at, lectures and things like that. And then I go to work, and at work, today with the size that we have, is basically impossible for you to try to micromanage and be, making a lot of decisions. What you have to really spend your time on is, align a vision with a team, have a goal post, a North Star, hire great people, spend a lot of time, hiring people, promoting them, training them and things like that. And then there are some milestones, that you take a look at and you are more involved, but it's a lot of time with people, just for you to have a sense. For example, every Monday afternoon, I have blocked to interview people, that join the organization, and I interview basically everybody that joins, the ZX organization in New York, or the marketing team in New York, or anybody that joins at a senior level anywhere in the world in marketing, so I dedicate time to that. So that's
how much time do you spend with your CEO?
We spend some time together. You know, we have kind of our, you know, our rituals at ZX, to be very honest, was very light. You know, we'll get together for, you know, on a routinely basis, like 1 hour every quarter. And then I would access him whenever I felt the need, and he was always available there. Now we have more. I mean, it needs to be a bit more integrated, right? But we spend some time together. It's not a lot, to be honest. We've been trying to be agile, you know, and really to get together, not for the sake of getting together and reviewing yeah. Performance, but more, you know, added value meetings, you know.
Sure. So you were 18 years with AB InBev, working all around the world before you were appointed CMO. So I was 18 years at P&G before being appointed CMO. So we did it about the same time in our career. So did you feel prepared? You're 90 days into this job, right?
Yeah.
Did you feel prepared for it? Do you feel prepared now? Are there any new muscles or skills you're developing?
No, not at all. You know, I think
not at all prepared.
No, not at all prepared. We always, you know, in our company, we always do that, right? We never wait until someone's prepared to kind of give the challenge. We always count on people to be curious and humble and hardworking to kind of catch up to the things that they don't know, or, you know, the things that they need to know. But we are kind of never prepared, you know. So one of the things, for example, you know, in terms of kind of data analytics, technology, and things like that, I've been a bit away of this world because I was more on the venture side of things for, you know, for the last 5 years. And one of the things that I'm spending time on, for example, is to catch up in marketing technology, you know, on digital in general and things like that, you know. So
what's been your biggest aha in the first 3 months?
I think the power, you know, the power of data and the possibilities of digital, you know, what technology is offering us basically will allow us to, you know, to be 10 times more efficient in the marketing that we do. Again, you know, it's all about...
You just bought a beer rating company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ray Beer.
Yeah. So that's to gain more data about consumers and habits,
yeah, exactly.
And practices and trends.
Exactly. Again, you know, everything that we do is to make a difference in people's lives, right? But the more you understand about who are the people, you know, what appeals to them, you know, what are their routines, you know, what's the best moment for you to send a message, it basically makes your life much easier, much more efficient in terms of marketing, right?
Mm-hmm. So tell me what, I always ask people this, what's your best day so far as CMO and what's your worst day and why?
So far, I didn't have any worst day, to be very honest. You know, I'm always very optimistic and very, very upbeat about things. My good days is whenever I'm kind of learning new things with the team and finding, you know, opportunities and things that are exciting, that we feel that are, you know, massive opportunities that we can capture out there. If you think about it, Jim, you know, we are a big company, you know, but if you take a look at the total alcoholic beverage industry in the world, it's a $1.5 trillion opportunity for us, right?
And as you're, you said,
we have $55 billion company, right? So we are still tiny, if you will, in terms
of $55 billion company.
Yeah.
That's good.
In terms of the total opportunity, it's tiny, you know, and for a long time, to be honest, in terms of, you asked about consumers and being consumer-centric and things like that, for a long time, I think we saw ourselves as a beer company, you know, and now we see ourselves much more as a company that brings people together. So we are much more agnostic to the products that we offer our consumers. You know, before we were like, okay, I need to sell beer. You know, now I try to take a look at consumers saying, look, you know, what's the best product that I can offer people that will bring them together in a better way, you know? So it's a massive opportunity.
You know, so many legacy companies, big companies, old companies are trying to be young and stay fresh and be more agile and be more daring, accept failure. So you were running ventures for several years. Mm-hmm. Now you have the CMO role and ventures. What can we learn from you about instilling more of a growth mindset in a large company? Because I'm sure that's why you're in the role.
Yeah, right?
That's probably why your CEO saw you as perfect for this. So what could others learn from you in terms of what you were doing to make this large company that wants to feel small, What lessons have you had in instilling that the startup mindset, the entrepreneurial mindset in the mothership?
Yeah. We're still in the beginning of the journey, right, Jim? I mean, we set up ZX 4 years ago. You know, the business has been growing, right? We just crossed kind of our $1 billion in revenue mark, which is a, you know,
with ZX Ventures.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is a, you know, it's a very good.
So you went from zero to a billion.
Yeah. We were $150 million when it started because we had some ventures, you know, craft business and e-commerce business already that were in place. But we've been, you know, growing very fast. And I think the big aha was that, you know, entrepreneurship is a form of management. You know, and we like management, you know, and we like people have this view that actually innovation and entrepreneurship is much more about intuition and having a great idea and things like that. In a way, has creativity and has intuition like marketing does, but there's a lot of process for you to get there, you know. So we took that strength of ours, which is, you know, this obsession about you know, operational excellence, and we try to apply that to entrepreneurship, you know. So you take a look at different metrics, you know, you hire different profiles and things like that. But at the end, it's about, you know, putting a process in place that can yield great results, you know. So I think the main thing that we learned, you know, in the last 4 years is that you know, to create something new and make it big is a very different discipline from taking something, you know, big and make it bigger. And we are very, very good, you know, at taking things that are big and making them bigger, right? We are in historical terms, we're more scalers than creators. And now we are kind of developing the muscles of becoming creators and, you know, starting with consumer problems, and then developing products and then making them business that can get big.
Was that the biggest mindset shift to start with consumer friction, problems, opportunities, and
yeah,
work backwards?
For sure. I mean, the, you know, this obsession about the two questions, you know, that we're always asking ourselves. And it's funny now because, you know, even our CEO, you know, Brito, now there are a lot of times that he applies the same questions to the core business, which is, you know, what is the consumer problem that you're solving? And how are you solving it in a significantly better way than what's out in the market, you know? And that's kind of the mindset that we have for everything that we started in the venture side. But now we also trying to apply that mindset to our core business.
Fantastic. So Pedro, this issue of KPIs, right?
Yeah.
You've run many businesses in your career, and we're going to talk about your career in a minute. When you're running a business, the KPIs are pretty clear.
Yeah.
You're growing household penetration, loyalty, trial, profitability, new users, everything. Now you're in a job where you're looking at over everything. And as you said earlier, you know, you have a very broad scope and you have ventures and all the current brands. So how do you measure success? What could others who are in a job with multi-brand companies learn from how you judge success? What are your KPIs?
Yeah. So we are big fans of KPIs, right? And we...
Key performance indicators is what we mean by KPIs.
We believe it's very important for, you know, for people to have a big dream. You know, for brands to have a big dream, but then being able to measure whether you're on track to that big dream or not, right? I think the big mistake is that sometimes people use the same KPIs for different stages of business or for business that are completely different, right? So for a long time, again, you know, in our scaled business, right, for ABI, core brands, whatever, we use the regular metrics, as you said. You know, we use like net revenue growth and market share and loyalty and, you know, consideration and things like that. Now, for businesses that are getting started, the metrics are completely different, right? So we are taking a look more at, you know, desirability metrics and viability metrics and feasibility metrics, which are very, very different, right? Because, you know, I'm not sure if it was Eric Ries or Steve Blank that gave that definition that, you know, a startup is a temporary organization searching for a replicable and scalable model. And those are the metrics that we have to take a look at a very early stage company, right? So to be very honest, we have kind of the same discipline on KPIs on our scale business and our ventures business, but the metrics are very different, you know.
And how about for your personal KPIs?
Yeah, I also have that again, you know. I think that applies to everything, right? So again, I think it's great for everybody to have a dreaming life. and knowing where they want to get at, and then you know, track against that and see on how they're evolving. You know,
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. So you're 19 years with AB InBev. Your career has been interesting. So what? Tell us how you got to this place, not in detail, but what are some of the countries you worked in, favorite assignments? What prepared you well for leading this amazing marketing organization now?
Yeah, so I started as a trainee. You know, we have a very strong training program at ABI for more than 25 years now. And I joined right after college. This is my.
You were in London. Did you start in Brazil or UK?
Exactly. I was in London, and then I joined in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I did my university in London and joined the company in Brazil. My first and only job. So a lot of people sometimes they ask me, how does that compare with other companies? And I don't know how to answer because that was my only job. I started there. And at the time, you know, it was kind of sales was our competitive advantage in Brazil, you know, because everybody, kind of if you could, there were so many bars and restaurants in Brazil and the distribution was very weak. You know, so if you could get to more bars than your competitors, you will win. So the competitive advantage was really in sales and distribution. And when I finished the training program, I said, I want to go in sales and distribution, you know, because that's what the company needs as a core competitive advantage. And then because I did economics and I spoke English at the time, whatever, people wanted me to work in M&A. And I said, look, no, but M&A is not the core of the business, you know. And I, you know, if it was to go to M&A, I'll probably... I'd rather go to a bank or to a, consulting company because that's their core business, not our core business.
Little did you know at the time it would become a core business, right?
Exactly. You know, and people are like, no, trust us. There are great people in M&A. And then I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And then I joined M&A and, my boss was promoted within 8 months. And then I had another boss. And 8 months later, 1 year later, my second boss was promoted. And then they gave me the chance to head M&A for the company at the time in 2002.
So you were heading mergers and acquisitions when you were how old?
I was 24. Wow. Yeah, 24. And totally, if I'm unprepared today, at that time I was really unprepared. It's fun. The story is funny. The CEO got me when my boss was kind of promoted. You know, they looked for people for 2 or 3 months, and I was there. You know. And one day the CEO called me to the bar. We had a bar, at the office, and he kind of grabbed me and he said, look, we're going to give you the chance of becoming the head of M&A, but I'm going to give you any consultant you ask, any bank, banker's help that you need, whatever. But if you screw up because of lack of being humble, on what you don't know, then you're fired. Other than that, you can do whatever you want, And that's the kind of
fabulous boss, right?
Yeah, that's the company. And then I did M&A for a while, and then exactly the same thing happened. I was in M&A for a long time. I did, some big deals like the Interbrew deal at the time, the Quilmes deal, our expansion into Central America.
So what were the biggest brands you brought into the company in that deal?
Yeah, so Quilmes, right, was a big deal for us. In Latin America, Quilmes basically had a massive presence in half of the Americas. We had the other half. And then when we did the deal with Interbrew, we had Stella, we had a massive press in China at the time and things like that. And then I ended up coming back to M&A, during the AB transaction when we did the Budweiser deal. But at some point in time in M&A, I was doing that for a while. I said, look, I would love a new challenge. And I think the competitive advantage for the future is going to be marketing, but I don't know anything about marketing. And then again, the company gave me the challenge, and I became global head of insights and innovation in marketing, at the time. So I lived in Belgium and in Canada doing that. And then I came briefly back to M&A for the AB deal. And then 2015, you know, they invited me to for this ventures role. And again, had no idea about ventures, never worked in ventures. But that's how, you know, that's how the company
fabulous
is.
Career path. Fabulous and unusual.
Yeah. Right.
So super marketing exciting. Today, you know, you've been in it now for several years with your M&A background. What do you think is the most important new capability, new skill that you're trying to build within your organization?
Yeah. Again, you know, I think, you know, starting with what's not going to change, you know, I think the brand purpose, brand ideal, this is always going to be the, you know, the make or break, right? I think the other things are gonna make that better. But if you don't get that one right, I think you're not going to have a great business. So I think the two things that we're really focused right now in terms of, you know, creating new muscles and new capabilities. One is this whole thing about digital transformation. You know, we started the e-commerce business, you know, for the company back in 2015. And I saw, you know, very close how data, you know, and how having a frictionless and easy path, you know, to consumers can really revolutionize your business. And I think now we have really an opportunity to do that with a whole, you know, marketing organization. So I think that one is a big, big one. And then the second one is innovation. You know, one thing that I was talking to some of my, you know, my peers, you know, last week was that we spent this week in China talking about, you know, all the areas of the company, you know, from marketing to sales to supply to ventures to whatever. And it's very clear, you know, if you take a look at companies out there are some small companies that are winning, right? And they really have amazing brands and they are growing a lot. And you know, I was talking to my peers saying, look, if you take a look at these companies, right, in every single function, we are probably 10 times better than what they are, right? Our people processes, you know, our supply processes, our, you know, sales organization, our technology capabilities, whatever. But there's one thing that some of these guys sometimes are doing better, right? Which is to identify a consumer problem or identify a consumer need and creating a product to fulfill that need. You know, so even with them being worse in every single other thing, you know, they're still winning the marketplace because they have this consumer focus and they are creative in how to deliver these solutions, you know. So, I mean, companies like ours that are big, have people, have capabilities, it's kind of shocking that they are not innovating faster and better than some of these small organizations, you know. So that's kind of a second capability and muscle that we are strengthening.
Yeah. And both of those capabilities you just mentioned, digital transformation and innovation, at the end of the day, what doesn't change is start with the consumer backwards.
Absolutely.
And how can you make their life better in some way, shape, or form? We just don't focus on that with enough of our time in our organizations.
Absolutely.
Can never get complacent on that. So I'm going to flip into a few industry questions in a minute, but I'd like you to share with me, when you pass this job along at some point to someone else, like Miguel did to you, his predecessor, Miguel Patricio, what do you hope people say about you? This might be 3 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out. I don't know when it will be. What do you hope people say when you pass this job along? I think, inside the company and outside the company.
Yeah, you know, if we become kind of, my dream is if we can be the most consumer centric, you know, and innovative company in the world, I think we, you know, this is kind of the, you know, the dream.
You didn't say in your category, you said in the world.
Yeah, in the world. Yeah. If you take a look, I mean, you read the mission statement of Amazon, which I like a lot and admire a lot, is they want to be the most consumer centric company, you know, in the world. Right. And I really think in the future, companies that are not that, you know, they're going to be dead, you know, because today, I think in the future, the categories are going to blur and, you know, CPGs are going to compete with technology companies and things like that. And if, you know, being the most consumer-centric company or being very consumer-centric is going to be a matter of survival, right? So I think being able to understand consumers better than anybody else, create products or services or experiences that fulfill their needs better than anybody else and deliver that, you know, in a seamless and convenient way, I think that's the ultimate competitive advantage, right? So if I can kind of help the company in that journey, I think it'll be a great legacy. And I think the second one is, you know, the people aspect of things, right? We always, our dream has always been, you know, to build a company to last, you know, and again, this company, the first brand of this company is from the 13th century, you know, so I think we have a massive responsibility of taking the flag, you know, forward and leaving the company for the next generation, better company than the one that we inherited in, and people is the number one thing on that, right? So Miguel, people-wise, has always been a massive inspiration, you know, for a lot of us. And you know, if I can leave to my successor a team equal or better than the one that he has left me, I think that will be a great legacy too.
It's a beautiful remit. Well said. Thank you. Who do, you said Amazon. Who else do you admire in the outside world, the companies that you look to?
Yeah, I think Amazon for me is amazing. You know what these guys were able to do, you know, in terms of, they defied a lot of the, you know, of the established beliefs in terms of like core business, you know, and what you can do and stuff like that. So they challenge a lot of the, you know, preconceptions that people had about what's possible, what's not possible. I like a lot, you know, sometimes companies that are also closer to our business because they, you know, we can translate better the learnings. The two ones that I admire a lot are Nike and Red Bull that are kind of closer to us, you know, because they are really obsessed about their mission, mm-hmm. you know, but they are very agile and very flexible in how they deliver that dream, you know, or that mission, right? In the case of Nike, you know, in terms of like, you know, inspiring people to become, you know, to become athletes. You know, they started with shoes, right? But then they went into technology and now they are into kind of community, right? With the Nike running clubs and stuff like that. And Red Bull's the same thing, right? Red Bull always had that mindset of energizing the world and things like that. They always been obsessed about that. But they went from, you know, an energy drink to a media company to owning, you know, sports teams and stuff like that. So I think these companies are very inspirational to us.
So you're talking, both of these companies, Nike and Red Bull, are lifestyle brands now.
Yeah.
And certainly Apple is a classic lifestyle brand. You could say, you know, maybe BMW, Harley Davidson at its best, lifestyle brand. I like your perspective on how does that happen? You just talked about Nike and Red Bull being focused on innovation and content and technology and expansive view of their business, not being stuck on shoes. Any other insights that we could learn from your, how does that happen? When does it happen?
Jim, I always go back to, you know, to the difference that you make in people's lives, you know, and this could be functionally or emotionally, you know, and I think these brands have become lifestyle and people get so connected to them. It's because they've been able to do that in a, you know, spectacular way, right? So this could be, again, you know, it could be very functional that people fall in love with the brand because the brand functionally address a pain point that they have. But it could also be emotionally, you know, sort of the brand allows them to be recognized, you know, to be admired and things like that. I think Apple, for example, you know, from a lot of people, I'm not a technology expert, you know, but people take a look at a lot of the Apple products, you know, and kind of the description and the technology behind Apple products. And people say, look, there are products out there that from a technological standpoint, they are higher performance products than Apple, but Apple delivers the emotional benefit that others don't, right? So I think brands that become lifestyles, again, you know, they improve people's lives, be it from an emotional or a functional standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Great. I have a few other kind of really interesting industry questions to ask you that others would benefit from, I think. You have so many brands and you hire so much talent to represent those brands, athletes, actors, musicians. How do you do that? How do you decide who's the right fit?
Yeah, so, you know, I think this, you know, the athletes or the partners or the influencers or, you know, again, they serve the brand purpose, right? And they need to be a vehicle of improving people's lives. So I think, first of all, it needs to start with authenticity. You know, and a lot of times, to be honest, we try to get together with these artists whenever we have kind of a common dream, mm-hmm. you know, or a common objective with consumers. You know, so I think that's kind of a, you know, a starting point for us to say, look, do we have, if the influencer or the talent, whatever, they just want our cash and they say whatever, you know, we want because they are getting paid for it, it kind of doesn't work, right? Because they don't go above and beyond and it doesn't sound authentic. So the first thing is, you know, do we have aligned dreams, right? Do we want to do the same thing with our consumers and, you know, take them to a better place or not? And then it also goes to authenticity, right? I mean, there's a person really connects with our brand and admires the brand, or the brand has a connection to us. So to give you an example, we did last year the Bud Light dive bar tours with Lady Gaga,
right?
And you know, when our team start, you know, talking to her about opportunities of doing stuff together and things like that, she talked about, you know, in her very early days, you know, going to bars in the Lower East Side and drinking Bud Light, and you know how that brand, you know, emotionally connected with her because that was part of her history and stuff like that. So then you build a connection and authenticity, you know, that actually makes the whole partnership believable and authentic to consumers, right? So that's kind of
I grew up in Pennsylvania. When I was a young guy, I used to drink Rolling Rock. So if you want me to represent Rolling Rock, we might be able to do a deal outside of this.
Our Rolling Rock ambassador.
So the Super Bowl, right? It's the pinnacle of our advertising world anyway. Mm-hmm. You guys have always been represented well in that. What's your favorite Super Bowl ad of all time?
Oh, man, you're asking me too.
It's an impossible question.
Yeah. I have to be very honest with you. I mean, when I was kind of living in Brazil, you know, that NFL and Super Bowl is not very big in Brazil. So I've been really following Super Bowl much more when I moved to the, you know, to the U.S. Of all times, you know, I really don't know. I have to think about it. But, you know, this year, one that I really enjoyed was, the Budweiser one, with Bob Dylan, you know, blowing the wind song. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Of course.
You know, it's kind of a subject, you know, that if you think about it, can be very boring, right? To talk about, okay, now our beers are brewed with 100%, you know, renewable energy. But I really think it was, you know, in a artistic way, it was a very well-crafted, TVC, very emotional, you know, gave me a goosebump. So I really enjoy that one.
Yeah. I want to end with a speed round. Okay, I'm just going to ask you a few questions. You just react from your heart,
sure,
emotionally. So what's the one non-AB InBev brand you cannot live without?
Beer brand.
Yeah. No, a brand that you don't have. What's a brand in your life you cannot live without?
Ooh.
That's not your own brand.
My Beats headphone when I'm running.
Your Beats headphone. Good. All right. Super. So a book you are reading, if you're reading a book right now.
Yeah, I'm reading. I mentioned to you like the new to big and big to bigger. Yeah. David Kidder just wrote the book New to Big.
I just read that.
Yeah, so that's the one that I'm reading right now.
New to Big by David Kidder. It's actually fabulous.
Yeah, it's a great book.
It's funny, it's lively, and it's useful.
David is part of our advisory board at ZX, and we benefit a lot from the learnings that he has.
Yeah, fantastic. Series you're watching, Netflix or Amazon or Hulu. Is there anything you're watching now that you love?
I haven't watched a series in a little bit, but the two documentaries that I've watched recently, one was Free Solo from HBO.
It's on my list.
Amazing one. And then Innovators, right? The story of Theranos. Mm-hmm. Scary one.
Yeah. I'm reading that book now, actually.
Yeah.
Bad Blood.
Bad Blood.
So favorite beer?
It depends on the occasion. You know, it really depends on the occasion.
At a sports event, what's your favorite beer?
Budweiser.
After a marathon?
Michelob Ultra.
Okay. With food?
Stella. Stella or Goose Island. I also like Goose Island.
Hanging around with your friends?
In the evening? But it depends. So if it's during the day, like at a tailgate or a barbecue, whatever, probably Bud Light. At night, I like a lot the Blue Point Toasted Lager.
You know, I like that too.
It's a little bit more flavor. It fits a little bit better the night occasion.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, super. So biggest passion in the world for you?
My kids.
How many do you have?
I have twins. I have two and a half year old twins.
How old?
Two and a half years old. Yeah.
Well, you're busy.
Yeah.
You're busy.
Very busy.
You need a beer now and then.
Very busy. Yeah.
Pedro, thank you.
Yeah, joy.
It was a beautiful conversation.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Absolutely. So that was my conversation with Pedro Earp. I thought it was really interesting that when I asked him about his favorite beer, he couldn't answer that. So he has so many favorite beers, depending on the occasion, who he's with. So he was kind of thinking segmentation as he was trying to tell me what his favorite beer was. I've known Pedro for many years, and one thing I learned in our conversation today, which kind of blew me away, is his deep background in M&A. And he did not come out of a finance background. You know, he was involved in big deals that have built the modern AB InBev when he was 24 years old. That kind of blew me away. That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production.